Part 1. What is it? No one wants to be that person who is known to utter falsehoods with the intent to mislead, i.e. a liar. Liars are seen as not only untrustworthy and immoral, but as thieves. Lying to others is clearly meant to control. The intent is to win at some zero-sum game. Eventually, liars and the lies they tell are unearthed, as the truth has a way of wending its way to the surface, to be exposed to the disinfectant that is light. Despite knowing this to be true, we are content with lying to ourselves, creating a state where there is an incongruent relationship between our beliefs, our actions, and the reality of the world. Because of whom we are and how our consciousness is structured, it is impossible to successfully lie to ourselves, force the collusion of the conscious and unconscious aspects of the mind when they hold opposing beliefs. This practice is called self-deception, and it gives rise to an unrelenting mental unrest called cognitive dissonance. In essence, self-deception means that both the liar and the one being lied to, yourself, is aware of both the truth and falsehood simultaneously. Unfortunately, everyone deceives themselves at some time or another. Self-deception is thought to be a mechanism by which the mental load required to engage with a world filled with conflicting information, eliciting conflicting beliefs, is reduced. The more self-deception there is occurring, the more likely it is to manifest as a mental health complaint, typically depression or substance abuse issues, secondary to knowing that you are living in a way that lacks integrity. Self-deception practices can take many forms, from the seemingly benign to the dangerous, from motivating or ego-boosting speeches to denials of reality. From a personal standpoint, the lack of perspective combined with needing and wanting to see ourselves and our circumstances in particular ways is why self-deception is so potentially dangerous and debilitating. As articulated by many philosophers over the last 200 plus years, self-deception has been considered objectionable because, one, it facilitates harm to others and to oneself. Two, it undermines autonomy. Three, it corrupts conscience. Four, it violates authenticity. Five, it manifests a vicious lack of courage and self-control that undermine the capacity for compassionate action. Six, it violates an epistemic duty to properly ground self-ascriptions or form beliefs that conform to the available evidence. In other words, it violates the knowledge to recognize your own agency and a failure to grasp what is your personal responsibility. This fascinating topic remains controversial in philosophy, however, because of the questions still surrounding it, including 1. Whether the practice of self-deception is intentional and self-deceivers are morally responsible for their actions. 2. Whether the practice is morally problematic, and if so, under what circumstances. 3. Whether it is an evolutionary adaptation, and why did it evolve? Not sure, but could it be 4, as posited before, a means to decrease cognitive load? Who knows? I will submit, however, that the humility and acknowledgement about the nature of truth tangentially raised by these questions is fun to contemplate, alongside the additional question of what is truth? We define truth, usually prefixed by the word ultimate, as something that must conform to the following characteristics. It must be absolute, meaning that it must exist independently and undiminished, universally valid. It must be correspondent, how something relates to and describes the world accurately. It must be coherent, meaning logical and consistent. It must be universal, meaning exists in everywhere. It must be exclusive, meaning full undivided, excluding other things. It must be objective, specific, measurable, not influenced by feeling and opinions. Facts, as best as we know the truth. So, what is an example of a truth that meets all those criteria? Firstly, do we agree on what the defining adjectives mean? Would an aphorism that describes the nature of our greatest fear, loss, suffice? For example, something like, quote, one is never afraid of the unknown. One is afraid of the known coming to an end. This aphorism is attributable to Jiddu Krishnamurti, an Indian author and philosopher. Is that a truth? Buddhist philosophy proposes that even the self is not real, not true, but rather an entity that is not personal and is unchanging, while Hindu tradition posits that the self is immortal, non-material, and is identical to the highest reality. I will discuss the self a little later in another episode. Moreover, because ultimate truth as defined is unknowable, we cannot ever resolve Fitch's paradox of knowability, which asserts that the existence of an unknown truth is unknowable. After all, how can we know truth when we are able to acknowledge that we have to think of what truth is with our faulty minds, that is, actively coagulated with self-deception mechanisms? Would anything that is produced by this mind ever be without question as to its nature being true? It reminds me of another saying I came across called Arthur Schopenhauer's Law of Entropy, as in disorder. It states that if you put a spoonful of wine into a barrel of sewage, you get sewage. If you put a spoonful of sewage in a barrel of wine, you get sewage. Despite the remaining questions, however, it can be agreed that the practice of self-deception is an obstacle to attaining self-knowledge, both individually and collectively, by denying us the ability to make changes that improve our life. It is also seen to be a problem of existential concern that suggests that there is a distinct possibility that we live with distorted views of ourselves, others, and the world that may make us strangers to ourselves and blind us to the nature of our significant moral engagement. I would argue that despite these contradictions and the sometimes painful mental effort required to glean some understanding of our world and life, we should continue to aspire to do the best we can and adapt when needed, rather than to succumb to psychosis. Self-deception can take many guises, all driven by the motivation to maintain the incongruity between our beliefs of ourselves and reality, to defend our fragile egos, but is only perpetuated by a failure to adapt, to evolve. Because we can only see reality from our perspective and seldom from the perspective of others, self-deception is quite easy to recognize in others, but far more difficult to recognize in ourselves. We are at times intrinsically determined to maintain our reality, that is, safeguard our egos, by engaging in cognitive distortions that temporarily decrease the hurt of the blow that reality has landed on us. In certain situations, engaging in intentional self-deception may be necessary and life-saving, but altogether they are practices done to avoid the fear and anxiety that arise when there are conflicts in our head. Some ego defense mechanisms are considered adaptive and useful, while others are downright harmful and debilitating. Hope you have enjoyed this brief introduction to self-deception and it intrigues you enough to come back to learn more. In the next episode, we will discuss the various mechanisms used in the practice of self-deception with examples. I leave you with a quote. Though our view may be as vast as the sky, our conduct should be as fine as barley flour. Padmasambhava. Thank you for listening. Meanwhile, care enough to act with virtue, dream despite your deepest fears, live honestly with dignity and grace, and above all, love without expecting reciprocation as you continue your inner odyssey.